talking about a home.
From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Charleston Fall Home Show, and Charleston's online home show, charlestonhomeanddesign.com, this is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. This is Talking About a Home.
Home again.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. This week's home theme song was the song Time by Pink Floyd, performed by Green Sky Blue Grass. In addition to the great Chris Isaacs talking about a home, and special thanks to today's show producer, Ebony Ellis. In addition to our radio show Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the two custom home shows we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which happens every January, and the Charleston Fall Home Show, which is coming up August 27th through the 29th at the North Charleston Convention Center. Well, today we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be talking to interior decorator Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That. And then also Greg St. Pierre, a custom builder. He is one of two brothers, St. Pierre brothers, that are involved with St. Pierre Construction. And that interview is part of our ongoing series, Brilliant Builders and Renovation Sensations, which is brought to you by the Charleston Home Builders Association and also Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And I did mention the Charleston Fall Home Show. If you would like to participate in the Charleston Fall Home Show, give us a call at Charleston Home and Design Magazine at 843-577-7652. Booths are selling fast. Have a great weekend. And joining us now on the phone is Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That. How you doing, Debbie?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tim?
Good, good. Debbie, take a moment and tell our listeners all about Designs by Imagine That.
I am a interior design firm, and I design anything from your kitchens to your bathrooms to small room designs to and everything in between. It can be farmhouse, it can be luxury, elegance, it can be any of those things, and I enjoy doing them all.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I am looking at a bathroom project in the our latest issue of Charleston Home and Design Magazine, our spring issue, which we have our big bathroom feature in. And can you kind of paint a picture for our listeners of this particular bathroom project that you were involved with?
Yes. So my client, she is from up north, and she moved here. She wanted something Charleston. She didn't want to bring her northern colors down here, and so she hired me, and we this bathroom is an actual bathroom reno, and it had large 12 by 12 12x12 Hunter Green tile. The tile went from the floor to up the side of the wall and the entire shower area. We removed all of that. It also had that large square tub that everybody had 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we removed that large tub that no one ever used and opened this bathroom up and to more of a coastal theme.
Gotcha. Yeah. The 12 by 12 inch tile, that particular size of tile is a bit dated in itself. A lot of people are having the large format tile put installed these days rather than just the 12 by 12. And have you experienced that, Debbie?
Oh, yes, yes. Like, I will, in fact, I'll do a variation. So in this shower, in this bathroom reno, I went from a larger tile, and then as I went up the wall, it went smaller. And then as well on the floor, it's more of a 12 by 20, I think it was 12 by 24 inch tile. Mm-hmm. And so we bricklaid it.
Nice.
So, and we're not going running in them up the wall nowadays.
Gotcha. So you went from you took out the 12 by 12 size tile, and then, and that 12 by 12 was Hunter Green, which it's like a double whammy as far as being a dated looking bathroom with that Hunter Green. You're not installing a lot of Hunter Green tile these days, are you?
Oh gosh, no, absolutely not. And it was very dark in that bathroom, very, very dark. So we lightened it up with shiplap and. You know, when I told my client, I said, let's do the entire space. And she's like, I don't know. Maybe we should do one wall. I'm like, no, just trust me. Let's do the entire room. And I said, it's going to lighten this thing up. And so we did. And she went with it. And now she loves it. It's her little oasis. We put in a floating standalone tub. And she said she comes home from work and she just relaxes and she just feels like she has her own little spa.
That's a common experience that interior designers have with their clients, in that, you know, a client wants something that wants a bathroom or whatever the project happens to be, the kitchen or even a whole house. They want something that is, you know, has an outsider's help with, and that's where you come in as an interior designer. But sometimes during the process, it's a bit of a leap of faith for the homeowner to approve certain things that that you as the interior designer pick out for them. Do you experience that?
Oh yes, all the time. All the time. It takes a minute for them, and then once we dive into this or they see, you know, photos, I'll do a storyboard so they'll see. So I basically try to show them exactly which way I'm headed, and when they see it going in, they're thrilled. They're very happy with how it's going.
It's interesting. I've talked to so many interior designers, and I've experienced this myself too, working with interior designers on my own home, where there's some hesitancy. There's a little bit of a trust factor when the interior designer is suggesting you know, certain finishes and things like that. But then you sort of cross this threshold where it's like, oh my gosh, I would have never come up with this look of my bathroom on my own. And at that point, it's wide open. They trust you completely, and they're like, if you think this is the best way to go, then that's the way we should go. Have you experienced that?
Yes, I actually have a client in St. George, and we're renovating her whole home, entire home. And so she told the contractor, look, whatever Debbie says goes. You don't even have to run it by me. I'm just, we were in the tile place. I don't like to bring them in there. There's too much for them to see. So I had already gathered what I needed for her in one little area. And she looked around and she goes, well, what do you think about this? My immediate answer was, no, you can't have that. And she started laughing. She said, okay, that's it. That's all I need to know.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. It's like having a, I've always said this is, it's like having a best friend who, is helping you out. But most people don't have a best friend that's willing to devote the hours and hours and hours to a project. But the homeowner ultimately wants wants a bathroom or a kitchen or whatever project is involved. They want it to be the best looking and functional and all that, and most times they can't get that if they're trying to do this on their own. So we always strongly suggest homeowners work with an interior designer like Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That. And sometimes most people have never worked with an interior designer before. They might be intimidated that you're going to push the look that you want as an interior designer versus the look that they may like. Talk about your process. Like, how do you determine what you think each homeowner wants to experience in their own home?
It all varies. So if we are just, if I'm just bringing in some things and we're renovating, or we are just doing a living room or a kitchen together, I'll talk to them and get just really get to know them and who they are and what they like. And sometimes they like several different things, so I'll rein them into one specific style. But you can tell by their home when I walk in it a lot of times. And then if they're wanting to change it all together, then I'll run it that way. But usually, no, it's not my design. It's my design, but it's not, I don't push them to.
It's not your personal taste that you're pushing.
Yeah, like this is the way you're going to have to go, and this is signed, sealed, and no. I go with what they are wanting and just perfect it.
Mm-hmm. Do you ask them to show you any photographs or of just to try to get an idea of their the style that they are drawn to?
Yes, I do. I have them send me photographs, and also I will send them different ones because sometimes they're not really sure. So for them to be able to choose which way what they're which way they're leaning towards.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So back to this this bathroom project that's in the latest issue of Charleston Home and Design magazine. The headline says "Detailed with Care," and then the subhead is "These homeowners called an interior designer to help with decor choices and other selections for their Lowcountry Master Retreat." And so, in this case, the homeowners wanted to renovate their bathroom, and rather than when it comes to a bathroom renovation, you're talking about spending thousands and thousands of dollars, and you don't want to make a mistake. It's not like you can just cut and paste like you do on your computer or something like that. You put the wrong tile in or something, or if it doesn't look the right way, it can be a very expensive mistake. And so hiring an interior designer like Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That helps to close the gap in terms of making sure that the outcome of the project is successful and is exactly what the homeowner ultimately wants. The example I always use is you don't cut your own hair. There's a reason you don't cut your own hair, right?
Right, exactly.
You go to a professional.
Oh, yes. That would be a, definite disaster. And sometimes they do call me after they've started, and they have spent a little bit of money, and they're wanting me to, I'll bail them out, you know, because sometimes they'll get, they won't get too far, but they know that, oh, I can't go, I can't do this. I'm just not, they don't have the know-how for it. So, I do a lot of that. I'll help them. I'll help them get out from underneath where they started.
Right. Well, this particular bathroom, as you mentioned, it's got wainscoting on, shiplap on all the walls, floor to ceiling, and then you've got Calcutta white porcelain matte finish floor tile, both on the bathroom floor and also in the shower. And then you've got that nice white freestanding tub, and the homeowner must have just it, as you mentioned it, you went from it was a very dark bathroom to a very light and bright and airy bathroom, kind of a spa retreat for the homeowner, right?
Yes. I wish we could have her on. She absolutely loves it. She takes her wine in there and her book in there, and she just relaxes after a long day in front of that computer she works at.
That's awesome. Well, if anyone is thinking about doing a project, or maybe you're in the middle of a project and you just need a helping hand, we definitely encourage you to reach out to Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That. And how can they reach you, Debbie?
They can reach me. My number is 843-345-5788. And they can also find me on Facebook and Instagram and message me through there.
And you can also look for Designs by Imagine That in the pages of Charleston Home and Design magazine and on our website, charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Well, we have been talking with interior designer Debbie DeLong with Designs by Imagine That. Thanks so much, Debbie.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tim.
Welcome to Brilliant Builders and Renovation Sensations, a podcast and blog brought to you by the Charleston Home and Design Magazine and the Charleston Home Builders Association. Talking with us today are Greg St. Pierre. He is one of the two brothers who lead St. Pierre Construction. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Greg, take a moment and tell everybody about St. Pierre Construction.
Well, we pretty much focus on high-end residential construction east of the Cooper. We've been in the industry for 25 years, been in business for ourselves for 20 years. We used to do a little bit of commercial work for some guys back in the day, but for the most part, always done residential, and we just love doing new construction, renovations, pretty much anything construction related.
Mm-hmm. How did you and your brother get into the construction business?
I started working for a builder that was based on Sullivan's Island right out of high school at 17. Already been building a lot of stuff prior to that. My brother and I used to build skateboard ramps and tree forts and all sorts of things, scrounging lumber out of dumpsters and using my dad's tools. And so when I started for that builder right out of high school, I just kind of fell in love with it right away. Again, we got to work on beach houses and downtown historical houses from an early age. So that's kind of what we've always done, had a nice balance between the two and just really enjoy it.
Hmm. Did you, when you borrowed your dad's tools, did you bring them back or did you leave them out in the rain like I did?
No. We were, my dad's pretty strict. So anything we used had to go right back, but he had some stuff there for us to use, and we made the best of it.
Gotcha. So how long has St. Pierre Construction been in business?
20 years.
20 years. Okay, yep. Gotcha. And St. Pierre, that sounds like a French name. Are you of French heritage?
My brother and I both were born and raised here, born in Charleston and grew up in Mount Pleasant. But the name is French-Canadian. My father's from Maine, and his grandfather walked across the border from Quebec. So up in New England and Maine, especially, there are a lot of French Canadians that came down from Quebec. And we have a huge family up there and a smaller version of the family down here.
You don't have a French Canadian accent. I've talked to a few different former hockey players, for example, and
no, again, yeah. So my parents have traveled quite a bit, and then my mom's from Canada, so neither one of them has a real thick accent of any kind. And again, we grew up here. So
you still have family?
Yeah. My dad's one of 13 children and my mom's one of 9. And they were the only siblings to move away on both sides of the family. So most of our family is up north. Huge family on my dad's side. I'm one of 32 grandchildren, and the great-grands are upwards of 60 or so now.
Mm. Well, I bet you get lots of calls. Hey, we're coming down to visit.
you would think, but... Mainers are a different breed. You know, they like to go ice fishing and things like that. I have several of them that do come down, aunts and uncles that come down, but a lot of them stay close to home, mm-hmm. Go to camp on the ponds and lakes up by their place. But it's beautiful up there. We go up there normally every year or every other year, typically during the summertime when it's really nice. My parents have a little cabin on a lake.
Do you watch that that? I think it's on DIY Maine Cabin.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I like that. It's yeah. I mean, Maine's a really pretty state. Obviously, if you've never been there, it's very nice in the summertime, a very short summer, but very pretty. And I am intrigued by anything building. So I do watch the Maine Log Cabin Builders or whatever the show is called. Occasionally, if I flip past it, I mean, I don't TiVo it or anything.
Right. Right. Not obsessed with it.
No.
What's it like, two brothers working together in the same construction company?
Well, it's really not a big deal. I mean, we were basically forced to work together from an early age. Our father used to take us to work together at his seafood business. And then we started a landscaping business when I was 8 and Jeff was 10, you know, basically pushed into that by our father. So we didn't always get along younger, but we had no choice to ride in the same vehicles and go to work together every day. And my parents both... we're pretty adamant about making sure that we got along. And even though you fight as siblings, at the end of the day, you're family. So we kind of work through most of those quirks and kinks early on. And nowadays it's no big deal because we have each other. We know we can trust each other. No one's going to steal from us. At least neither one of us. And we know what each other can do and that we're going to be there for each other. So it's quite nice, actually.
Sounds like your dad had a lot to do with your work ethic and always working hard.
Yeah, my dad was the third of 13 children raised on a farm in Cowtown, Maine. So there wasn't a whole lot of time for anything other than work and school. And basically, you get up in the morning, do your chores, go to school, come home, do more chores. And that's kind of the philosophy that he took. He just did what he knew, which mm-hmm. was working.
Is that the actual name of the town, Cowtown?
No. It's just, okay. Yeah, it's Livermore Falls, Maine, but it's just, you know, when he grew up, there was nothing but, you know, farms and a paper mill.
Gotcha.
And to this day, it's really not a whole lot different than it was then.
Right, right. How was the labor divided amongst you and your brother?
Well, for years, we did a lot of work for other builders. We were doing subcontracting work, pretty much anything carpentry related. So we were both wearing our tool belts and just kind of helping with anything and everything. And nowadays, you know, for the last handful of years, we've been contracting our own projects. So he runs his projects and I run mine, and we kind of, we don't overlap too much. I handle a lot more of the upfront meetings with owners and architects, et cetera, and still run some projects. And Jeff is normally running at least a few projects and helps with logistics on the rest of our projects and other day-to-day mm-hmm. issues.
Sounds like the two of you both came from, you know, a background of swinging a hammer versus maybe being in the front office of a construction company or something.
Yeah. So again, we grew up working, doing just about anything my dad could think of. I mean, he would lend us to neighbors in a heartbeat to help him move or dig holes or, you know, whatever. So we've been running shovels or hammers or whatever since we were little kids. And so it's kind of a natural fit when I started right out of high school, and Jeff joined me about a year or so after that. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of guys in this industry nowadays that are kind of briefcase builders, if you will, where they've never really swung a hammer. You don't even know which end of the hammer to hold, but they jump into the construction industry just because there's money to be made. We just kind of fell into it by chance. And again, carpenters by trade, so we love what we do, but the background of growing up working and then having the carpentry background is huge. It really helps a lot on our projects. We have a very good understanding of what all of our subs and vendors need from us. So we're not just scheduling the job and hoping it all works out. We're actually there on site making sure everything flows properly, and it's extremely helpful.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, how does that construction background of actually being on the job site, how does that impact, or how is that a positive for the clients of St. Pierre Construction?
Well, to me, it's crucial just because, one, we love it. So we're there every day anyways, helping to figure out issues. We can work very closely with our subcontractors and owners and help figure out problems, really. I mean, even the best builder and the best set of plans are going to be some hiccups along the way and things to figure out. And actually knowing what you're doing and having the experience helps a lot, whereas a lot of guys have to rely solely on their subs. Now, we do have really, really good subs that work with us. We have a team of guys that we don't go shopping around for four or five plumbers or electricians. We have one plumber, one electrician, for example. And so it's a tight-knit team where everyone looks out for each other, and that helps the process flow a lot smoother as well. But having the background is priceless.
You know, there's a lot of homeowners that rely on whatever the municipality where the building permit was issued, the inspector to kind of check things and everything. And sounds like you're going to be able to see a problem before the inspector even gets there.
Yeah, I mean, that'll only get you so far. There are some good inspectors out there, just like any trade, but then there are also a lot of guys that just learned on paper. Mm-hmm. How to be an inspector, but they don't really know what they're looking at in the field, which can cause problems. We typically try to foresee as many problems as we can and make sure there aren't any issues. We very rarely fail an inspection. Normally, if we do, it's some minor thing that can get taken care of very easily. But it does help a lot to make sure you got your I's dotted and T's crossed before the inspector ever gets there, because the owner definitely, you don't want to rely on just the building inspector. I mean, they certainly look at things for code issues, but they don't deal anything with quality issues.
Right.
So, they can come out and it can pass code, but it can, not be up to par.
Mm-hmm.
And so having eyes and ears on the job site daily is crucial.
Are there any other family members involved with St. Pierre Construction?
Nope, just my brother and I.
Gotcha. Is there a particular building philosophy that St. Pierre Construction follows?
I wouldn't say there's really a philosophy. I mean, of course, we all have our own ideas and opinions on how things are to be done. We basically learned under other builders as we worked for them over the years, the best practices. We don't claim to know everything or be the best at anything. I think we're continually learning, always trying to come up with new ways to do things. Sometimes the best way is the old way, though, not necessarily the newest, greatest thing that someone's trying to sell you. So we try to have a delicate balance there of sticking with what we know works. Obviously, the building envelope, waterproofing, et cetera, those things are crucial. So we don't deviate too far from the game plan on that. We use methods that are tried and true, and it really is not that complicated as long as you follow the guidelines and pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the process a client of St. Pierre Construction experiences from the time they make contact with you to the time that the you break ground.
So it really depends. Every client is different. We get some clients that come to us very early on in the process, whether they've picked an architect yet or not. But ideally, the earlier we can get started in the process, the better. We can help clients look at their plans from a preliminary stage, whether it's a new construction or a renovation, and we can help them understand the potential costs that come along with what they want to do, because a lot of times people have an idea for what they want to do and they have an ideal budget in mind, but if they don't meet with us or someone else ahead of time, then they can get way far down the road and realize that the project is significantly more expensive than they wanted. So the earlier we were brought in, we can help them get ahead of that and not have any surprises down the road. So we just, again, really try to help the clients as much as we can with understanding that. We are very detail-oriented and schedule and communication-driven, so we kind of overload our clients with schedules and all the details of the project, and it really just helps everything flow smoothly. Some clients come along later in the game, and it just everyone has a little bit of a different approach on when to select a builder, and then everyone's needs are a little bit different too. So it's really up to each individual client.
How important is it to have an architect and an interior designer involved in a project?
Crucial. Obviously most of the projects that we're working on are high-end residential, so there are a lot of selections to be made. Sometimes clients, have a design background, or they're really good at those sorts of things, so they like to basically act as their own designer. But a lot of times they need help because there are just so many decisions to be made. So most of the projects that we have do have a designer involved. And obviously an architect is necessary because someone has to draw the plans. But also an architect doesn't just draw the plans. I mean, they're the ones that kind of help foresee any potential issues and try to work closely with us to make sure that we can achieve what the clients want within their budget.
Mm-hmm. Once a project starts, talk about the process a homeowner experiences while their dream home is being constructed.
It depends on whether they live here or not. We have a lot of clients that are out of town. So again, communication and scheduling are big for us. So we share the schedule. And we also do biweekly updates, keeping the client up to speed on what's happened the last 2 weeks, what's going to happen the next 2 weeks, et cetera. We also show them on our schedule selection dates of when we need certain items so we can stay on schedule. And when we're doing those updates, we send photos and details of, what's happening and anything that we may need. And really, as long as we communicate well with them and keep them in the loop, the process flows pretty smoothly. So our clients are normally happy. We also like to under-promise and over-deliver, or whatever the term is there.
That's it.
So that, our clients are happy at the end. We normally are coming in and finishing our projects before the scheduled completion date. And that's because we typically like to err on the side of caution and make sure that we have enough time in the schedule to get the project done and it's not a rush job at the end.
What is the time frame for a brand new house to be built for St.
Peter? I would say most of the projects around here are 12 months. Some of them that are a little more involved can be 14 to 16 months, but on average, most of them are right around 12 months.
And these days, there's some supply chain issues and hard to get certain things. And how has that affected construction?
And you're absolutely right. So basically, we just have to plan ahead. Some things like appliances now, some of them are 4 to 6 months on a lead time. So we just push our clients to make those selections early so we can order them as soon as possible. Material costs are up extremely high right now, but we normally, if we're pricing projects right now, we are accounting for that. So we put a lot of extra fluff in our carpentry budgets to make sure that we have them covered for material costs. Obviously, if those costs were to go down before they start, then they would hit the savings, but we're trying to give them a very realistic idea, because if we just used normal pricing and then you got to the point where you're ready to start framing the house, they'd be extremely disappointed when they start seeing the bills come in much higher than expected. So we just try to stay ahead of the game. We are constant communication with our vendors to make sure that they have what we need. This day and age, we do have to make some changes occasionally if you can't get your hands on a certain product, but we won't skimp on anything. We won't cut any corners. So it could mean that we may have to wait a week or two longer than we'd like to get our hands on the correct product, but I think that's the right way to go. And normally, if we have enough fluff in our schedule, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Inevitably, challenges will pop up during construction. Can you give me some examples of things that can go wrong and how St. Pierre Construction handles these challenges?
If we do our job, there really aren't that many things that can go wrong. I'm not saying that mistakes can't happen, minor things that you have to fix. Of course, you run into issues with weather delays. We're in a hurricane-prone area, so every summer we're always a little worried as hurricanes approach, and we may have to batten down the hatches and prepare for that. So sometimes, even if it's not a hurricane, in the springtime, we get a lot of rain around here. So if we are in the middle of a big renovation with finished rooms in the house and we have to keep it watertight, that can be a challenge when it's windy and rainy. So some things do pop up. You have to call an audible at the line of scrimmage every once in a while and shift gears, cover a house and protect it and do whatever it takes to make sure that the client is happy and the product doesn't suffer. More importantly, make sure that, you know, in that situation, no water's coming in or anything like that. But again, we have a really good team of guys in-house. We also have 9 carpenters that work for us full-time who are eyes and ears on our jobs at all times. And with our good subs that, you know, really know what they're doing, we don't really have many issues. I mean, again, small things can come up, but really the only time something bigger comes up is if someone wants to change something. Or if, you know, they didn't go to an architect and they got plans from a draftsman or someone else and the plans are lacking, that can be a problem. Mm-hmm. So the quality of projects that we're working on for the most part really warrant hiring a good architect, because they can really help the client understand the entire project, the scope of work, how things are going to flow. You know, sometimes people think they're going to save money and they don't want to pay an architect. Well, you're going to pay it in the long run. You know, when you go and you don't have an architect and then you go get another builder, then you're left with surprises, one surprise after another, which typically ends up over budget and long past the scheduled completion date. Mm-hmm. So getting the architect, designer, builder, building that team early on is very, very important.
For someone who maybe has never built a house before, they might look at the cost of hiring an architect as being maybe something that they can cut the corner on. But in my experience, when we built a house 12 years ago, the architect designed a house that we would have never been able to envision in our wildest dreams, and so many details that we would have just never thought of. And it puts the contractor in a difficult spot when you start getting hit up for advice on design advice, or, you know, things that maybe the architect should be answering those questions for.
Sure. And I mean, I couldn't agree more. Honestly, even with as long as we've been doing it, I love it. And I do love the design side of it as well. So it's fun for us to meet with the architects, designers, or owners and help figure things out on site. But even with as much experience as we have, there's no replacement for a good architect, because absolutely they're going to help bring other things to light that you didn't think of. Things that I think are invaluable. So to say I'm going to save X number of dollars up front, you're really not. Mm-hmm. Your project's going to suffer, and the end result is not going to be as good as it would be if you had an architect involved.
Yeah, you'll get paid back, not just in the
absolutely
enjoyment your family will.
Yeah, just the things that you. I mean, every renovation that I've ever done for myself, I mean, my ideas change constantly. You think you've got it nailed down, and then you're sitting there one afternoon or someone else brings another idea to you. So having that other perspective and the experience of a good architect is priceless.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of contracts does St. Pierre Construction have? Do you have a fixed cost or a cost plus?
Typically we do fixed costs, and the only variables that we have are the allowances, which are the finishes that are in the control of the client. The reason we do that is because nobody likes surprises. So basically when we start with a client, as long as they don't change things, you know, after a wall is built and you tell me you want to move it or tear it down, then obviously that would be a change. But other than that, we try to think of anything and everything that we possibly can. And we put numbers into our budgets for those. And, that way there, again, there's no surprises. So whatever we say is in framing or plumbing or electrical, it won't cost them a penny more. You know, some people do like to do cost plus, but then that also leaves the door open for what if the builder's budget isn't that great. Mm-hmm. And he tells you he needs $50,000 for framing material and ends up being $70,000. Well, someone's not going to be happy when they have that discussion. Mm-hmm. So for us, and I think for our clients as well, it works really well to have a fixed budget in mind or in place. And so there are no surprises for them. So they control their allowances. And then other than that, unless they make a change, nothing else changes on our end.
If you're allowing the homeowners to pick the selections throughout the construction process, how do you help them arrive at an allowance?
So we are normally, sometimes the allowances are provided to us by an architect or designer if they've already made some of those selections, or if they have a pretty good idea of what they want based on the client or based on the designer or architect. If we don't have that information, then what we normally do during the bidding process, we have to do very detailed takeoffs on everything. So we have quantities for tile, linear footages for cabinets and countertops and all that type of stuff. So we can provide all of those allowances to the client, but what we don't know is what are their tastes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one client might pick a $25,000 appliance package and another client might pick a $65,000 appliance package. So if we don't know that, we normally try to err on the side of caution and we put very healthy allowances to all of our line items, knowing that the clients that the projects that we're working on are high end. Mm-hmm. We don't come in with lowball figures that are basically worthless. So even if we don't have a clue what they want, we put money in there for nice tile, nice finishes across the board. Of course, they can spend more than that if they like, but normally we have them covered and then we have savings in a lot of categories.
Most homeowners want the range with the red knobs,
the Wolf,
right?
Sub-Zero, myself included, right? No, they're great. Great product. Wolf Sub-Zero is a very good company, but that doesn't necessarily meet everyone's budget. Mm-hmm. So there are other products out there for that. But again, when we're putting together our allowances, we try to err on the side of caution, and then they have savings in there as opposed to every time they go to shopping for something, they're over budget.
How do you answer the inevitable question, what's my cost per square foot going to be?
Well, obviously that's a bit of a trick question. If you're doing cookie cutter houses in the production world, that's an easier question to answer because they're just stamping them out one after the other. In our world, the custom world, it's a whole different ball game. I mean, we did a house last year, 4,000 square feet, and it had 35 windows in it. And while we were in the process of doing that house, someone else asked us to bid on their project. And of course, they want to know how much it is per square foot. Well, same size house had 65 windows in it. You know, one house got 35, one house has 65 windows. That's a huge difference. Each house, you know, may have a lot more porches or decks or other things that can really change the pricing. So what we normally do is we don't typically give out those ballpark numbers just because they can vary so much. Obviously, we have a pretty good range in mind based on past projects. But what we normally do is if they have any type of plan in place, we can take that plan, put together a very detailed estimate, and be within 3-5% of the actual cost of construction. And we would rather take the time to do that up front to make sure that the numbers that they have in front of them are realistic. Because if you just pull ballpark numbers out of thin air, you can be way off and you're thinking that your project is $1 million and it's really 2 million or whatever the case may be. And that's just not a good scenario. So we'd rather be truthful and upfront as early as possible to help guide the clients maybe through the finalizing the design phase of their plans. And more importantly, to have a very good, the truthful understanding of where their costs are going to be.
An elevator, for example, can really throw off the cost per square foot, for example.
Well, exactly. So an elevator is $20,000 to $25,000 typically. You know, most of the houses we do have them, but some don't. And then obviously around here, there are a lot of elevated houses. Some are elevated, some aren't. There are just so many variables. So, you know, if you were to point to a couple houses and say, how much do you think that particular house, or if they have pictures or a plan, then we can, you know, we can give them a pretty realistic idea. And everyone does ask the price per square foot number, but we typically shy away from trying to give that number unless we're just talking in a broad range. If we're talking in a broad range, great, no problem. We can spit out a number for you if you really want to know. But ideally, I would rather spend the time up front to put together a little more of a detailed estimate so we're not just pulling that number out of thin air.
What are some of the features of a home or particular brands that St. Pierre Construction will always recommend to a homeowner? For instance, shutters versus impact rated windows, or you know, certain energy efficient products and surfaces.
So I guess to start where you said, windows and doors, obviously huge part. The building envelope, making sure it's watertight, is crucial. So my thought on that is I would much rather see impact rated windows, because when a storm's coming, you know, getting someone there to put up the shutters or make sure the roll downs are working properly is difficult because everyone's in scramble mode. So I would, you know, most of the projects we do, if they have shutters, they're decorative. You know, years ago before impact rated came along, then, you know, you pretty much had to have something for impact. But I think going with impact rated windows and doors is very, very important. Some other things that I guess I would say to us, I mean, you know, there are so many things that a lot of good builders are doing, so that they're not our processes, or, you know, I can't claim to be the only one doing them. Energy efficiency is huge. So we typically like to use closed cell spray foam in our floor systems and our roofs. Our climate is brutal for humidity and heat. So whole house dehumidification is something that's not a code, unfortunately. I think it should be, but that's something that we push very hard with our clients, whether it's on the plan or not. And it's tough sometimes when someone says, okay, this guy's HVAC number is $10,000 or $15,000 lower than yours. Well, yeah, but I've got three whole house dehumidifiers in your house and they don't. And the reason we do that is because, I mean, crack a window or a door around here when it's humid outside and it can just rush inside. And so maintaining over 60% humidity inside your home for long periods of time is when mold starts to grow, which is obviously not a good thing. So whole house dehumidifiers are crucial for maintaining air quality and maintaining moisture inside the home.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Do you have a preference for roofs, metal versus shingle?
I mean, obviously, I prefer metal roofs. They just have a cleaner look. You know, your very old homes, say in downtown Charleston, for example, they didn't do shingles. They had standing seam metal. So that's kind of a very classic look that a lot of people do. A lot of our projects are on Sullivan's Island in Mount Pleasant, and so they're trying to match that old look. So we'll do standing seam metal roofs or 5V metal roofs, which save money. Occasionally do shingles, but not that often. I mean, shingles nowadays have come a long way. They obviously look a lot better than the three-tab shingles, and they have 40, 50-year warranties on them now. So if a client is looking to save money, that's certainly a place to do so. But it really just depends on what they want to look like from the outside.
Does St. Pierre Construction build spec homes that you put up for sale or custom homes where you're hired to build a dream home? And do you have a preference?
Well, we typically do custom work. Unfortunately, we don't have deep enough pockets to be building spec homes. And not that I would be opposed to it. There is some fun in that. But I also like the higher end custom world that we live in all the time. Because, you know, like when we were younger, when we were framing houses for other people, for example, we were working out in Park West and Dunes West building like these Hilton Gooch boxes. And I was just bored out of my mind, you know, building basically the same house over and over. Do you want two dormers or three dormers? Do you want the garage on the left or the right? And that really just doesn't do it for me. I really enjoy the custom side of things and figuring out issues and putting things together instead of doing the same thing over and over. So spec houses tend, not always, but tend to be built on the cheaper side. And given our background in carpentry and our level of quality that we're trying to put out, it is tough to do a spec home the right way and then sell it and still have enough money for profit. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it can't be done, but there are a lot of guys out there that only care about making money. So they're slapping up a inferior product basically just to have greater profit margins. And I like making money as much as anybody else does, but I'm not in this business to just make money and slap them up one at a time. That's just not what I'm interested in doing.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for someone looking to hire a builder?
Do your homework. Anyone can have good reviews online or on their website. I would say definitely try to call at least 3 to 5 of their past clients and really get an understanding of how their experience was. If they had any negative experiences along the way, obviously meeting with the builder themselves, taking a look at some of their products is crucial. And then from there, just who's going to be a good fit, because it is a long process. You know, the building process is about 12 months, but you normally have at least a handful of months before that and potentially a few months or so after that as you're dealing with certain things, and it's kind of a relationship for life. And you don't want to be married to somebody who's not going to do what they say they're going to do. So doing a little bit of homework up front, and I guess the other big thing would be not just jumping on somebody for a low number, because there are a lot of people that leave things out of their bids, whether it's intentional or unintentional. The number looks good, and then the client is upset later when the price is significantly higher. Mm-hmm. So I think doing their homework up front, even though a number may look good to you on paper, you know, don't take the low guy's bid just because it's the cheapest. I mean, you get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. In our industry, and especially in this environment, I mean, you do not want to take the cheap route. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there are ways to save money. We typically try to provide some value engineering options for our clients in areas where they are looking to save money, but we're not going to cut corners, and we're not going to provide cheap materials or inferior quality labor. I just think that's a bad approach, and you're going to pay for it in the long run when you're having to do it a second time, you know, not that far down the road.
A builder told me a long time ago that he was a little frustrated that people tend to spend more time researching the purchase of a car than they would the building, the construction of their dream home.
Yeah, it's it's kind of baffling sometimes. There are some guys around who have a very bad reputation, but they can sell ice cubes to Eskimos. So they continue to get their hands on really good projects. And if those clients had just done a little bit of homework, not much, ask around. It's a small community. You can find out pretty quickly that those guys do not belong in our industry. And it's very unfortunate. You know, sometimes people get connected with a builder like that just because they like their price. And in that case, you know, I think they're at fault a little bit. But there are shysters out there. You know, there are people that are in this business to just make money, and they don't care if they're hitting you with change orders nonstop. And so I don't think it's that hard to figure that out up front, but it's very surprising to see how many people that are highly intelligent and very well off, and they won't do the homework.
Mm-hmm. St. Pierre Construction was the recipient of two PRISM awards recently. One was a $1 million historic renovation of a Sullivan's Island beach house, and the other one was a new construction project in the $2 to $2.5 million range, also on Sullivan's Island. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, those were two projects that we finished last year. The renovation was an old historical home on Sullivan's that we tore off the back half that was not historical. We lifted it and we shifted the house 4 or 5 feet forward and a few feet to the left. Renovated that, and then we added onto it, and so that was a fun one. We really like the historical ones, and moving houses is always cool. And then the other one was a brand new home on Station 19 right by the lighthouse for a great client that just moved down here from North Carolina, and that was start to finish. Rachel Burton from Swallowtail Architecture introduced me to the client early on, and she selected us during the preliminary stage, so that was great that we got in early. And we were able to work through issues or potential concerns with the client and the architect and designer. And both of those were really fun projects. Both came in, you know, we finished them before we said we would. And that's normally what we try to do, is just keep the client happy the whole way through and get it done when we say we're going to.
Mm-hmm. Very, very easy question. What kind of pickup truck do you drive, and what does your brother drive?
I've driven Chevys forever. So I have a Chevy diesel pickup truck, and my brother drives a Dodge diesel pickup truck. I guess the reason we had the diesels is because we have a lot of trailers that we tow heavy equipment with. So having the bigger motor and transmission is key. Having a truck alone is key. You know, there are project managers or builders and stuff out there driving around in a Subaru that can't fit a 2x4 in. So we are actually, you know, we're not scared to get our hands dirty, throw material in the back of the truck, whatever it takes to get the job done.
And final question, whose cute dog is featured in the story in Charleston Home and Design magazine that people can see in our spring issue?
So Mark and Laura Schroeder are clients on the Station 19 project. That's their puppy dog sitting there in the foyer. And they were nice enough to let us shoot the home multiple times and show the home to clients to try to get more work. They're very, very nice people that just moved down here from North Carolina, and we loved working with them.
Well, I think that speaks a lot to your relationship with your clients, because the conventional wisdom is at the beginning of a project, everybody loves each other and everyone's in a great mood. But by the end of the project, you want to kind of wring the contractor's neck. And the fact that they, you know, they've opened up their house to you so many times and so forth, and probably have recommended you to St. Pierre Construction to a lot of other people that might be looking to build, that speaks very highly.
Yeah, for us, I mean, obviously, we're just trying to do our job, which again, I don't think it's that complicated if you just do what you say you're going to do, but it's a very good feeling having great clients that are happy to show off their home, happy to let us show it. And then again, that's the biggest thing. We are in this industry to make money, but So much of our work is word of mouth from past clients or architects or people that we've worked with. And that's important. Like, even if I wasn't going to get repeat business out of it, I don't want anyone out there running our name through the mud. So we will do whatever it takes to keep the client happy and make sure that we follow through on what we say we're going to. And it pays for itself because, we've heard that same thing over and over about how people don't like their builder by the end. Well, I guess I don't really understand it because, we don't really have that issue as long as we do what we say. You know, we provide budgets and schedules that are accurate. And as long as we follow through on our end, the clients are happy. There are no surprises. There's really no reason for them to be upset with us. And, we deliver the quality that we say we're going to. And I think it shows. It's helped win a couple of Prism Awards. It's helped get us a lot more of repeat business and new business as well. But it's a really good feeling to know that you have people that trust you and are willing to, speak on your behalf when friends or family or even strangers call them, because we can give out their contact information. And again, anyone could put reviews on a website or online somewhere, but we try to give out our clients' information when we can so that they can actually speak to someone in person about their experience instead of one or two lines somewhere. And I think that helps a lot, and it helps sell projects for us also.
Well, the first boss I had told me that if you just simply do what you say you're going to do, you'll be in the top 5% of everybody out there, because so many people just do not. They talk a good game and they make some promises, and then you don't see the follow up. So it sounds like you're doing exactly what is needed to be successful.
Yeah. Again, I guess, like I said, I don't really. I do understand, because we deal with all kinds of people, and you're right. A lot of people don't do what they say they're going to do. Again, from my perspective, it's not that complicated. We're not lying to you up front. We tell you how we're going to do it and when we're going to do it, and we do that. And again, it's for us growing up here. I'm 42 years old. I'm planning on being in this industry for another 20 years or so, however long before I can retire. And our reputation is huge. I mean, we stand behind our company name, which obviously is our last name. We didn't come up with some random, Three Bridges Construction or something like that, that you can easily fold that company and move on to your next one. St. Pierre Construction means a lot to us, which is why we do what we say we're going to do, so that no one has the opportunity to badmouth us. And hopefully they're singing our praises to friends and family, and we have repeat business for years to come.
All right. Well, we have been talking with Greg St. Pierre. He's one of two brothers that are the principal GCs with St. Pierre Construction. Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. To make contact with any of the companies featured in today's show or listen to previous week's shows, visit charlestonhomeanddesign.com. That's charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Tune in again next week.